Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer here at the Journal. Welcome, everyone, back to the 2021 season. Just looking going forward, I wanted to start right off the top saying normally I would have my co-conspirator, Kevin McNamara, here with me. Corporate decisions being what they are in the age of COVID, Kevin is no longer with us. He has branched out to his own private website, kevinmacksports.com. He's going to be hitting college basketball hard, whether it's Providence, URI, Bryant. Expect him to remain a major factor on the scene and wish him well in that endeavor. With that in mind, this podcast will not be called The Pick and Pop going forward. That's something that Kevin and I shared and conceptualized and really enjoyed in the time that I got to work with him. With all that said, I did want to continue this. I think it's important in this market where we take college basketball seriously and have a lot of stories to tell that we might not necessarily be able to fit into the pages of the Journal. And this gives us a little bit more of an informal format to express some opinions and fire out some hot takes. And thankfully, the media contingent here in the state, luckily for me, we have a deep bench of college basketball experts here. You heard Nick Coit on the previous edition talking about Providence and Brown. Now we introduce our second co-host for the season from WPRI 12, Maury Hirschgordon. Maury, welcome to the pod.
So Pick and Pop is obviously retired. What about Screen and Roll? What about And One? We got to come up with a little bit of a name here.
We'll brainstorm it. Ideally, when they open one of these establishments, you and I and Coit will get out and have a couple hours and theoretically, the ideas flow from there.
Exactly. The remote shows. I like it.
No question. But thanks for coming along and agreeing to do this throughout the season. For those who don't know Maury well, he has a lovely and talented significant other, and one of these days they will engage in multimedia domination throughout this market.
So that's how I'm known.
Well, no. No, what I was going to say is, Sierra will love that, by the way. What I was going to say is, since you don't have to worry about this, but I would like you to, brush off your 90-second speed dating Maury Hirschgordon introduction of who you are and what you're about.
Yeah. So originally from Philly, born and bred, probably 25 miles from the birthplace of Fats Russell.
Okay.
In North Philadelphia.
Yep.
Grew up loving high school basketball. Coincidentally enough, one of my uncle's best friends was on the coaching staff at Laura Merriam when Kobe was there.
Sure.
So just from the get-go, just had a great pulse on high school basketball in Philadelphia. Got to travel the country with a guy who ran a lot of tournaments and just followed college basketball ever since. My dad grew up in Syracuse, so I bleed orange. That's my favorite sports team.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to Quinnipiac for college and was out in Wisconsin for a quick minute. And now I'm here and coming up on 3 years this spring. So definitely have seen a lot of success with the college basketball programs, namely last year, Providence, URI, and Bryant and Brown, clearly. And then I've also seen some teams underachieve. So I think, I've kind of gotten a good grasp the last couple of years and just excited to be on the pod with you and Nick and talk hoops because there's no better time. We didn't know if we would be here, but thank God the season is hopefully about to start.
Yeah, we've all kind of looked at it and thought about it from last March when the NCAA tournament was canceled. When are we going to see this again? Are they going to get 2020-21 off the ground? Is it going to actually happen? We're within a week now, so you can almost reach out and touch it. But I think if COVID has taught us anything, it's that you can't really make too firm of plans, really, for just about anything.
For sure.
We are truly, in this industry, as we are in life, we're just sort of going day to day here, trying to figure it out as we go along. We wish the best to everyone listening out there. We hope you're healthy. We hope you're safe. We hope your families are okay. We understand that what we get to do here is fun and that it's not serious and that it's not necessarily the most important thing in your life. We're just here to give you a little bit of a diversion. And I think that's what sports does for you and I.
For sure.
On a daily basis. And ideally, we're a few days away from college basketball being able to do that for us here.
That's why we do what we do.
No question. And one of the best things about Maury that he brings to this, obviously with the Philly roots, is that he has an intersection of all three leagues that are primary here, whether it's the Big East, the A-10, or the Ivy League. And obviously being here for 3 years now, you've gotten to know about the NEC through Bryant.
Quinnipiac, my alma mater, was in the NEC.
Okay.
My freshman year, that was the first year in the MAC, but I've got plenty of stories on the NEC.
So, you know, just from along those lines, you have these four teams covered. You have an idea of who they are and where they're going. And I think we grouped URI and Bryant together here in our second edition of a season preview because you have two head coaches going into their third years at their respective schools, and usually that's a time where a program is poised to take off. If you've done it the right way, you've sort of installed a way you want to play, a culture, you know, sort of the way you want to do things day to day. You've tried some things. Some have worked. Some maybe have not. You've been able to bring in and establish two or three or four players who you want to build around. You know, we'll start with URI in that way. David Cox, in my mind, going into the year, has the best player in the market in Fats Russell. He was named on Thursday to the Naismith Trophy preseason watch list. That's the top 50 players in the country. You know, to watch that guy play as a senior, hopefully we get as many games as we can because he's exciting and a treat. You know, but just overall, Maury, looking at Rhodey, the 30,000-foot view of your impressions on what they're going to bring into this season.
So third year with David Cox, he's really kept the train moving since Dan Hurley has left and gone to UConn. Two pretty successful seasons. You know, maybe the first was a little underachieving, but last year really came out strong and was right there for an at-large bid in the NCAA tournament. So as you look at this season, obviously the big headliner is all the missing faces. The Tyrese Martins, the Jacob Toppins, the Makai Longs, on and on down the line. This clearly wasn't what the coaching staff expected. Wasn't what they wanted. David Cox has mentioned time and time again every single time we talk to him, every time he's asked it. That's not how they want to be. They don't want to be a program where they're a second opportunity for a bunch of guys. Unfortunately, that's the way they had to go. And man, oh man, did David Cox and his squad really take advantage of it.
Yeah.
They brought in a lot of four-star guys and a lot of key guys that'll hopefully be contributors to a program for 2 and 3 and 4 years, not necessarily grad transfers. They're in and they're out in 9 months, and then goodbye and good luck in your professional career. So I think when you look at Rhodey, taking all of that into account, I think this is a lot of question marks.
Yeah.
A team in the A-10 that could easily finish one or two. I won't say easily because the league is good, but could definitely finish one or two. You could make a case for them being a top two team in the league. They also have a big range, and they can finish, you know, 9, 10, maybe, if things really tumble, because there's so many new faces,
right,
so many new talent, lack of preseason, COVID protocols, lack of out-of-conference games, so maybe some quote-unquote cupcake games to get your season started. So many question marks, but so much excitement, I think, on the other end as well. And I think going into this season, URI has an opportunity to be very good. URI has an opportunity to make it back to an NCAA tournament, as my mask falls down. And I think it's just going to be interesting to see, with the leadership of Fats Russell, how everything meshes together. Fats Russell has been with some of the best players in program history. You see Matthews, you know, on down the line. He's been a part of an NCAA tournament win. And he said it, how do you mesh all the personalities? And I think kind of diving into each and every one here in our season preview, and as we see them progress throughout the season, I think it'll be very interesting. But I think David Cox has his hands full, and I think they're ready to go.
I have pretty much the same read on these guys. I see them as maybe having the widest variance of the teams in our market who will play this year. You know, our friends at Blue Ribbon picked URI 7th. The coaches and media poll in the A-10 have them picked 6th in the A-10. I had a vote in that coaches and media poll, and I placed them 3rd behind Richmond and St. Louis. And the reason I did that is because I just could not get away from what I saw on paper from this group. And I understand that it's going to be more difficult than in previous years to mesh this talent. You haven't had a traditional offseason. You haven't had a traditional practice schedule being what it is. But URI, having Fats Russell, who I think is the best player in the league, returning. You know, we can get into that a little bit later in terms of the hierarchy there. But I think he's the best player in the league returning. I think he, if he plays at his ceiling, could be an All-American candidate. Because he played that way for the first 20 games or so last season. I look at the guys they brought in, whether it's Jalen Carey, Makai Mitchell, Mikel Mitchell, all four-star recruits, didn't necessarily have big success at Syracuse or at Maryland, but those guys are rated in the top 50, the top 70, the top 80 for a reason. You're looking at other guys who are here, whether it's Jermaine Harris was a top 100 recruit. Will he eventually start to deliver on what you thought you were bringing in? He's a junior now in his third year. You hope that he's healthy. You hope that he's adjusted and that the second half of his career will be better than his first. You look at a guy like Antoine Walker, who was recruited to Georgetown, who was a good player out of the DMV. How much more is he going to be able to show you? A couple other guys who transferred in, whether it's Malik Martin, Hassan's younger brother. A lot of people are going to look at him and say, they're going to identify him in that way. He has a completely different game. He's a completely different person from Hassan. So it's not necessarily fair that you're going to evaluate him in that way. We haven't seen Jeremy Shepard or DJ Johnson yet. They both sat out last season. So who knows what's going to happen there? And that's not even getting into the freshmen, which ideally, if everything goes right, you probably won't see a lot of those guys. You're going to have most of these guys on the floor and healthy and whatever else. But I just could not get past the talent on paper, what I saw in front of me, how I consider them compared to the rest of the A-10. I think that this has the potential to be one of the deepest URI teams that I can remember. I don't necessarily know if they're top five compare with, say, Stan Robinson, Karan Iverson, Jared Terrell. I think that team might have had more proven, more veteran, more elite pieces going into a season. But these guys could get there.
For sure.
And I think that's a really interesting thing looking at them going into the year.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. You said it. The talent is there. It's undeniable. And if I had a vote and I was in your shoes, I would have done the same thing, Koch. Preseason polls are for talent on paper, for success from the previous year.
Right.
And, URI deserved to be third or fourth. But they've taken it as bulletin board material.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of motivation. Fats Russell saying during A-10 Media Day that, hey, we remind ourselves every single day. We were picked six in this conference.
Right.
And you have a first-team all-conference guy. Fats Russell wasn't even picked on the preseason all-defensive team. And last year he was tops in the country in steals and just one of the peskiest guards.
Right.
His play against Trae Young still gives me chills.
Mm.
NCAA tournament as a freshman. Just doesn't shy away from any player, any moment, any game. He's your gamer.
No.
So I think, URI has the makings with a lot of talent, a head coach that's done very well for himself in the first 2 years, and a little bit of motivation, a little bit of doubt from the outside,
mm-hmm.
that, hey, when the rubber meets the road, we're going to show everybody what we have. And I think they've got a good test. We're going to start right now, but a good test in 4 games in 5 days in Mohegan Sun.
Yep, they are members of Bubbleville. If we get there, hopefully we get there. St. Bonaventure announced a positive test, and they have been forced to pull out of Bubbleville. As URI sits here today on Thursday, right now they're okay. And their opponents are okay. They start with Stephen F. Austin, who obviously upset Duke last season at Cameron Indoor Stadium. They go to Towson, who is coached by Pat Scarry, former URI assistant. And then their next 2 games are South Florida, who's coached by Brian Gregory, who used to be the head coach at Dayton. And then Temple, Maury, a game that's going to be close to your heart, obviously. A team that's rebuilding a little bit under Aaron McKee, who is a program legend, of course. So URI, 4 games in 5 days to start off. They've got some other good ones on their schedule, whether it's Seton Hall, Boston College, Western Kentucky. Those are all pretty good opportunities. And really, Western Kentucky on the road could be the toughest out of those three. That's going to be a good team this season with Charles Bassey and with Luke Frampton, the Davidson transfer, being eligible immediately. So URI, not just on their roster, but in terms of their schedule, forced to adjust on the fly. And they've put themselves in pretty good position here with 7 non-conference games that could give them a little bit of a boost on their NCAA resume.
No doubt. No cupcakes. There's no Bryant. There's no Quinnipiac, who they were supposed to play. No Lehigh. So between Stephen F. Austin being picked first in the Southland and averaging 24 wins a year for the last 13 years, a couple NCAA tournament wins, Towson's top half in their league, South Florida is a team that not a lot of people are going to think is very good, and they won 14 games last year. You look at their record from a 30,000-foot perspective. This is a team that returns a lot of guys, and they have a chance to win 20 games.
Alexis Yetna is one of the best players that you or I will play against this year.
Oh, yeah.
At South Florida.
And yeah, if you're not familiar with him, I think it was the freshman of the year or on the all-rookie team in the AAC.
He's a good player. He's somebody you or I actually offered and recruited a little bit.
Okay.
He's a good player.
So Temple will always give you a fight, and then you look at Power 5 schools in Seton Hall, Boston College, and then, you know, you're going to Western Kentucky, who, you know, like you said, could be one of the best seven teams they have in their out-of-conference if they play up to their, you know, up to their potential. The way that David Cox and his staff adjusted on the fly to have these seven games set in stone, I think, has to be talked about and has to be commended.
Yeah.
Despite not having Providence, unfortunately. But, the job they did to at least have a chance to set themselves up, and it's exactly what happened last year. You win a couple big games, you win the majority of your others, you know, not to get too prediction heavy, but, you know, you probably have to win five or six of these out-of-conference games if you're ready to have a legitimate chance, and it's got to be some of the right ones, too, and right. Then hope that your losses don't become ones that are rock bottom. Hopefully those teams can stay afloat, the ones that you lose to. But Wednesday, November 25th, 11:30, those boys better get a good night's sleep before, because I think this Stephen F. Austin team is good. Like you mentioned, they beat Duke last year. They've got a ton of success. They're really well coached, and they have two really good players coming back in that league. So David Cox said it at his availability on Thursday. He said it's a bracket buster type of game.
Mm-hmm.
It's two of the best mid-majors in the country. And no different than any other year. Anytime there's two good mid-majors playing, when it comes to March and you're comparing resumes, if it's Stephen F. Austin in Rhode Island, you're going to say, hey, they played head-to-head. So there's always a chance to get an upper hand on other mid-majors. But, you know, the four specifically, Mohegan Sun, give Rhode Island a really good opportunity to establish an identity, play good talent, and hopefully have winnable games. And
right.
I think you hit on all three of those, and hopefully you come out with three or four wins.
Now, we could look at URI's opponents. We can't even take for granted that any of these games are going to get played. We hope that they will. I think that if teams can get through Thanksgiving and get the majority of their student bodies off campus and maybe sort of isolate their players even further, I think they have a better chance of getting games in all the way into January when second semester starts. I think that's going to be critical, that period. But I look at URI and I think to myself, you know, we can project what their opponents are going to be. Do we really know who they're going to be?
We don't.
Do we even know, you know, what their lineup is going to look like? I want to get into that a little bit.
Right.
Obviously, Fats Russell's going to play, going to start, going to take all the big shots. You know, he's earned it. He, as I said, he was spectacular at times last year, particularly through their first 20, 22 games or so when URI was receiving votes in the AP poll. They started 10-1 in the A-10. You know, they're going into a Dayton game, midweek Dayton game on the road. Dayton, who ended up in the top five at the end of the season, a game for first place in the Atlantic 10. Started slowly, lost that game at UD Arena. That happens to a lot of people. But the fact that URI played themselves into that position, that they were on the bubble going into the A-10 tournament, you mentioned a couple games in the non-conference that they probably needed to get one of them, whether it was LSU, Maryland, or West Virginia. If they had won even one of those games, they probably would have been at the bottom edge of the field among the at-larges. You know, and so it's going to be important how they perform. But I wonder how David Cox sees his team going into the year. I have to think, obviously, you're going to play Fats. You're going to play Jeremy Shepard, I think, who was really good as a freshman at East Carolina. Somebody who gives you another quick guard, another ball handler, somebody who can shoot the ball a little bit, which has been a real sore spot for them the last couple of years. And then up front, you have more front court depth on this team than you've had maybe in recent seasons. You have more bodies to pick from. For me, I get the sense my starting five would look something like Russell, Shepard, Jalen Carey, I think, is going to play the third guard. I don't think you bring in a top 50 recruit from Syracuse, get him immediately eligible, and then not play him.
I agree.
I don't think that happens at all. I think he starts from day one. Up front, I'm curious. I wonder what sort of conversations happened in recruiting with the Mitchell twins. I wonder how established they consider Jermaine Harris or Antoine Walker to be. You know, I wonder if those two guys start at the beginning of the year because they have been here. They're sort of given those roles, and those roles are theirs to lose. Or if all of a sudden they're coming off the bench behind the twins, who were obviously recruited to Maryland, have big upside, were both four-star guys. So I'm intrigued to see how David Cox maybe, you know, does some of the off-court roster management here as opposed to the on-court, the in-game decisions. I think that's going to be equally important as he sort of gets to know this team over the first four or five games.
For sure. I'm with your line of thinking in terms of the backcourt, in terms of carry, even though those three are a little on the shorter end, especially Shepherd and Fats, to have two of them back there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, especially in the front court, a lot of options. And especially we'll get into Malik Martin, but I think this kid has a real chance to, by this time the season ends, be one of their better players. Mm-hmm. At the three and the four. Might not start out playing 25, 30 minutes a game, but it'll be interesting to see how he can crack the lineup and stay in the lineup. But yes, I think Jermaine Harris should get the nod at the five. Hey, you come in as a freshman, you're highly touted, you know, adjustment to college basketball, whatever you want to say, a reason why maybe he didn't reach his potential, his expectations. Last year showed some flashes in a few games. The Maryland game comes to mind early on. Maybe playing at home helped. A few others, but again, not in terms of stats-wise, not really a double-double machine that you thought was going to be, right, you know, there by the time he was a sophomore. But I think it's junior year. It's his last chance. David Cox says he's expecting a big, big jump from him. And not only him, but also Antoine Walker, who was also a four-star recruit and was at Georgetown before he came to URI. So I think Harris definitely starts at the five. And then, yeah, like you said, I mean, these are guys that have been here. Jeremy Shepherd has been with the program. Fats Russell. Maybe Antoine Walker starts at the four. And Jermaine Harris starts at the five. So for as much roster turnover as there was, at least maybe four of the five are familiar faces.
Right. Maybe you started off that way and you figure it out over four or five games and you have an idea of, you know, what you've seen at practice, you know, and how you want this team to play together. The good thing and the bad thing at the same time is you've got four games in 5 days to sort of get it thrown right in your face right from the start. Games that you need to win, but games where you also want to find out who you are and what you're going to be. If you look at their identity, and this is where we get into the carryover from Dan Hurley and what David Cox has done, and I think we saw this last year. They're top 40 defense last year, according to KenPom. They're really pesky on the perimeter. When you have Fats out there, you can sort of disrupt opposing team sets. You can really bother their guards. You know, I expect Jeremy Shepherd to do a lot of the same things. I think they're going to turn those two loose and just make life really difficult for opposing ball handlers. You know, and I think they're going to worry about the big guys inside just sort of trying to clean up and you know, cover the paint. If guys want to gamble in passing lanes or be a little extra aggressive, you have size in there. You know, you can play a lot of different lineups here if you want. You could play big, you could play small. You know, they could play three traditional bigs across the front with Fats and with Shepherd. You know, they could play Jalen Carey at the four, realistically, or Malik Martin at the four,
for sure,
if they really wanted to, if they wanted to go small. You know, so there's going to be a lot of versatility there, and I think these are all good problems to have, right?
Great problems.
These are things that, as a head coach, you look and you say, I have too many guys, or I have guys who can play too many positions. You know, what would I really want to do? These are good things to be looking into.
The important thing, I think, for fans to also keep in mind is with the current NCAA rules of if you get a positive and you have to shut down for 14 days, or if a player's out, they're going to treat COVID like it is an ankle injury. It's good to have guys 9, 10, maybe even 11 deep that you can go to.
No question.
Because if Fats Russell and Jeremy Shepherd are out, well, boom, Ishmael Leggett, who's a pretty highly regarded freshman, mm-hmm, 5-10 games into the season, can maybe spot start alongside Jalen Carey, who's had, you know, point guard, shooting guard, a role at Syracuse, even though it was limited. So I think it's, while we talk about the team at whole and the depth that they have, and as hard as it'll be for David Cox to, I guess, tailor a rotation early on and to have it set 4 games in, 5 days into the season, a lot of good problems to have if you're him, because you have so many weapons and it just covers covers your bases on a lot of different fronts.
You know, and I think over the last 10 minutes, we've probably illustrated why the variance exists, where URI is going to be picked in this league, you know, between the top, the middle, you know, potentially if the chemistry experiment goes wrong, 9 or 10. I don't think that's possible, personally. I think they just have too much ability to do that. It would take a rash of injuries or something has gone completely wrong for them to be down there. But you look at the A-10 at large, Richmond is picked to win it, according to Blue Ribbon and according to the coaches. I also had Richmond in the number one spot. St. Louis, second, a consensus pick there. I also had St. Louis second. I felt like going into the year that those two teams sort of stood above everybody else. I think it would be a disappointment for each of those programs if they were to not make the NCAA tournament. I don't necessarily know that you could say that fairly about any other team in the league. No. Those teams would be disappointed to not make the tournament, but they will not be a disappointment.
No.
I think people need to understand the difference between those two things.
And the way that scheduling works this year and the way that teams in the Power Five conferences, like you mentioned off the top, I mean, they're going to rely on their schedules and their metrics and their numbers are just going to be better based on the teams they play in their league. So when you look at the Atlantic 10, as much as David Cox has said and other coaches have said, hey, we believe we can get five or six teams in the NCAA tournament. Yes, only two teams have that realistic chance at the beginning of the year to say it will be a disappointment if we're not in the tournament, and maybe a game or two based on the experience they have and the success they've had in out-of-conference games in past seasons.
You know, I look at Richmond and I just see an established veteran team, a team that, you know, was really coming on hard last year in March and probably would have squeezed into the field as one of the final at-larges. You know, team that's really talented, you know, Jacob Gilliard, Grant Golden. Those guys have been there forever. Blake Francis was a revelation last year as a transfer out of the NEC. You know, they're going to miss Nick Sherrod again, another knee injury for him, a really good perimeter shooter. Going to have a guy named Tyler Burton, who's a New Englander, fill his minutes going forward. You know, but Richmond sort of has a way of playing. They are established. Chris Mooney's been there for a long time. And between them and St. Louis, for me, the choice is I want a team that can score a little more consistently. St. Louis occasionally gets bogged down in these tractor pulls where you're playing in the 50s, and those are hard to win night in and night out. You could get tripped up against a team that potentially you should not lose to. I remember a few seasons ago, Dayton went into LaSalle. Dayton was really good. LaSalle was terrible. And LaSalle held the ball for 40 minutes, essentially, and bled the shot clock. Dayton had an awful night shooting, and LaSalle won the game. You could do that to St. Louis in theory if you're not as talented. If you want to get into a fist fight with them, good luck, because they have Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French and, you know, Javonte Perkins and guys who are really, really tough. I wouldn't advise it, but you can try. You know, Dayton, obviously, huge difference in their team. You lose a lottery pick in Obi Toppin. They've got a really good recruiting class for 21-22, but you wonder how they transition here with Jalen Crutcher, with E.B. Watson, with Rodney Chapman. You know, you're not necessarily sure where they go forward. I also think Trey Landers is a huge loss for them, a senior potential double-double guy, the ultimate glue guy. You know, so I look at the A-10, and yes, I could see the league ending up with three or four teams in the NCAA tournament. I don't think that's a stretch. I think the top two teams sort of start ahead of everybody else, and it's up to everyone to sort of catch up to them. And I think Rhodey is probably well-positioned among that group of Dayton, Duquesne, Davidson, St. Bonaventure, eventually when they come back from this two-week pause. UMass is Trey Mitchell, who I think will play in the NBA at some point and is terrific. You know, but I wonder who emerges from that group to be the third or the fourth team.
It'll be interesting to see. I think another thing to keep in mind is with the lack of fans and no fans that'll be in college basketball, how that affects the Siegel Center, how that affects UD Arena. And I know we spoke about that as we were kind of compiling some ideas before we started the podcast a week or two ago, but it's going to affect Dayton and VCU big time. And not to say that the Ryan Center doesn't get banged out, because it does, and it has a great atmosphere. And not to say that Richmond doesn't have a good atmosphere, and St. Louis as well. There's passionate fan bases all around the Atlantic 10, as well as for teams that are picked right now in the middle to the bottom half of the league. But the two that stick out is Dayton and VCU, and they rely on that, and I think it gives them a mental edge on a lot of opponents. So, you know, I think that's a big reason why St. Louis and Richmond were 1 and 2. To see who emerges from that quote-unquote second tier will be interesting. Another team, as we kind of work our way down the line, I think is interesting to talk about is, and I might be getting ahead of ourselves here, but it might be George Washington. I might be a year early. But what Jamion Christian has done down there, I think, is important to note. Again, probably not this season, but down the line, keep George Washington top of mind on the back burner. But you look at the teams in Tier 2, and Rhodey's right there at the top, but Duquesne, really tough defensively. They're not an easy out any night. St. Bonaventure, really well coached. And then, VCU and Dayton and UMass, it's when you have the best one of the best players in the league, it's you're going to be in every game. So I think it'll be interesting to see who emerges out of the Tier 2. But from 1 to 9, Kachi, I really think that it's one of the deepest years going into it preseason that the A-10 has had in a while.
Yeah, 2013-14, they had six teams getting into the NCAA tournament. You know, that was a shock to a lot of people. But you had an older league, a guard-dominated league. You know, a league that really beat each other up and did really well in the non-conference. You know, and I think the non-conference is something that's going to be a little bit taken away from the A-10 this year. Obviously, we've seen it in-state with Rhode Island not playing Providence. You know, that would have been a quadrant one road game for URI. History and tradition being what it is, the game should be played. But it is Providence's decision whether or not they want to play the game. They're not playing at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. They are playing at Alumni Hall this year. They're not having fans. You know, they were not going to forfeit their home court advantage on a year where essentially there wouldn't be much of an advantage. You know, and that does hurt URI. It does take away a definite opportunity from them. You know, there's probably not another team in the country who would give an unending home-and-home series to a team like Rhodey, who has won two out of the last three and won both home games. You know, Providence has made six out of the last seven NCAA tournaments. They feel comfortable with who they play in the Big East. They're going to get enough chances. I fully understand why David Cox was as vocal as he was about wanting that game played, because that is, and always has been in recent years, a chance for URI to get a marquee win on its NCAA tournament resume. And so saying that, you're going to need to take advantage of those seven games if you're able to play all of them. I actually think URI needs to win all seven, personally, you know, because I'm not sure how the A-10 is going to shake out in terms of quad one opportunities. I'm not sure how the selection committee is going to evaluate teams. That was another thing that David said during his A-10 media session that really stuck with me. What's the criteria going to be for NCAA tournament selection? We're not necessarily going to have the traditional 30-31 game sample. You could have some teams play 20 games. You could have some other teams play 27 games. You can look at KenPom, and you can look at efficiency, and you can look at traditional metrics like the net and anything else. But when you're evaluating one team on 20 games as opposed to another team on 27, it's going to be difficult to differentiate. So I think head-to-head, taking advantage of every opportunity you get, I think that's going to be more important this year than it has been ever before.
And a lot of times in your out-of-conference, you're going to play teams in better conferences, you're going to play teams in lower conferences, you're going to give guys more minutes in some situations, you're going to stick to your 7-8-man rotation other times to see how your team kind of responds as you get to league play. But this year, David Cox said it. I mean, we have to win, and we have to treat every game like it's our last. There's no time to, not that you would ever just waste a 5 or 10 minute span in a game, but you know, deepen your bench for that reason. This is, he said, he's going to use as many guys as he needs if he feels he can win the game. And he said it's important to go to Mohegan Sun to start off the season, win, and hopefully learn lessons. He said that's the ideal recipe: is learn who we are, learn our style of play, what we do well, what we need to address and work on, but hopefully win. And you got to win as many as you can. And if you look in a vacuum, they won't be favorites in all of them, clearly, but they definitely, you could make a case for them now before the season that they have an opportunity to win all seven.
Right. If you want to get to March, you need to win the games you're supposed to win and some of the games you're not supposed to win. URI is going to be in position to do a lot of that. The A-10 schedule being what it is, they play four games on the road against teams who are picked in front of them. It's going to be a good test for them. They have an opportunity to establish themselves as an NCAA tournament team again. To make it for the third time in 5 years, I think would be huge for the program and, huge for David personally, who's going into the third year of his contract. And, as we've seen before, you make an NCAA tournament at Rhode Island, you get extended, you have a chance to get some program enhancements. They've taken $2 million donations in the last week for a basketball-specific practice facility. So if you're able to keep that momentum going forward, I think that's huge. And I think this season could go a long way toward doing that.
No doubt.
So with that and with scheduling uncertainty, I think that's a good segue into Bryant. Because if you look at teams at the NEC level and that sort of lower major level, they are in the most flux in college basketball. You're talking about one bid leagues like the Northeast Conference, who essentially rely on playing three or four guarantee games out of conference before your season starts. That's basically your budget. That's what you're spending on your coaches, your travel, your recruiting. Bryant has one of those games right now. They're supposed to be at Syracuse on the 27th. They're supposed to open with Stony Brook on the 25th at home. The Syracuse game is in jeopardy because of a positive test for Jim Boeheim. Syracuse is in a pause right now, uncertain whether or not they're going to play that game on the 27th or reschedule it. Otherwise, if you go to Bryant's schedule page on their website, they don't have any other games listed other than the NEC. It's a really interesting time if you're someone like Jarrett Grasso, you're coaching in the NEC or the MEAC, or some of those traditional leagues that you're seeing playing in the first four in Dayton on that Tuesday night. And it is unfortunate in that respect because, like URI, Bryant brought in nine new players, and a lot of them have major, major pedigree. This is looking like a year where the Bulldogs could do some damage here in the NEC.
I think deservedly so. The direction that Grasso has the program going in is in the right direction, and the arrow is pointing up. They've got a great core in a few sophomores in Michael Green III, the reigning rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Pride, another sophomore who was he on the all-rookie team last year in the NEC?
Couldn't tell you. We'll look that up. Keep going.
Yeah. So anyway, you have those two guys who are both captains, nonetheless, who in 1 year have earned the trust of Jarrett Grasso, a guy that has been to many NCAA tournaments and has had a lot of success at the mid-major level. And like you mentioned, similarly to David Cox, hit the transfer wire hard and have found a lot of success. Whether it's Peter Kiss from Rutgers, whether it's Melo Eggleston from Arkansas State, who was at Wake Forest and was highly regarded coming out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the JUCO route in Chris Childs, who's an elite three-point shooter, who will take the place of a Benson Lynn. And you also have Hall Elijah, who's maybe one of the best athletes in the conference, maybe in the Northeast. At 6'8", he plays like he's 6'11".
Right.
He's one of the most elite shot blockers in the country when you look at the stats. They have the pieces, Bryant, to make a push at the NEC. The NEC came out and obviously said, normal tournaments, eight teams that make it. This year it's cut in half to four. So a team like Bryant, who has a lot of new faces like URI, who clearly has the talent to be there at the end of the year, now the margin of error is even thinner.
Right.
So the margin of error in the out-of-conference is thin because you barely have any games before the games count because they're the league play. And now you go from eight teams to four teams. So with that being said, even more onus on Jarrett Grasso and this team to start off well, to play well, to find guys who can contribute right away and then hope that turns into results. Like David Cox said, you got to win the games. You got to get as many games in as you can and win as many games. And I think this Bryant team has an opportunity to do that. And I think they're going to surprise some people. I think they expect to be there on championship whatever day that is, Monday or Tuesday in the NEC when they play at 7 o'clock on ESPN. But
sure,
yeah, I think of all teams in our area, obviously Providence expects to be in the NCAA tournament. URI expects to get there as well. But Bryant is right behind them, and they there's no reason why they can't do that.
Yeah, the NEC coaches poll, Bryant was picked tied for third with Mount St. Mary's. Fairleigh Dickinson and LIU Brooklyn were picked 1-2. Blue Ribbon had it the same. They have Bryant fourth. So you're right on that cut line for the reconfigured NEC tournament. You would be the final seed if you perform according to expectations preseason. You know, and I don't see any reason why Bryant can't do that. The NEC, in a given year, the talent is generally fairly equal. You know, the home court advantages are generally negligible. The thing that hurts you most is the travel. You know, because there are some long bus rides, particularly if you're going to St. Francis, PA, if you're going to Mount St. Mary's.
There's no Robert Morris.
Yep, there's no easy way to get there. Robert Morris is now in the Horizon League, you know, so you don't need to go all the way out toward Pittsburgh. You know, you're playing back-to-back games now at the same venue. The only team that Bryant will play home and home is Merrimack, and that's due to proximity. You know, that's probably an hour bus ride, give or take. You know, otherwise, you will be playing back-to-back NEC games either at home or on the road. So that lessens, you know, some of that burden of getting on a bus on a Wednesday night and trying to get to Mount St. Mary's and then getting on that same bus and trying to go all the way out to St. Francis, PA. Like, that's tough over 18 games. It's a really hard way to live. But just looking at Bryant's roster, and you started to touch on it, Maury, there are some guys here who have played at a different level, who have been recruited at a different level. You know, Jared obviously is a demon recruiter. He has been, you know, since he was at Iona. You know, another program that had a ton of turnover at the mid-major level, had guys transferring up and transferring down, and, you know, was in New York City, so they had a fair amount of access to good players. You know, you look at the guys we brought in recently. Michael Green's the NEC Rookie of the Year. Charles Pride was a four-time NEC Rookie of the Week, a guy who can score it on anybody. You know, the class that he brought in this year, you mentioned it. You know, Peter Kiss has played in the Big Ten. Melo Eggleston has played in the ACC. Luis Hurtado played at UAB previously, you know, and is somebody who profiles as someone who can come in and play right away. You know, Chris Childs was a JUCO All-American and a really good shooter, a guard out of the Bronx. You would imagine he's going to come with the requisite level of toughness from somebody who comes out of the Bronx. Darius Ginn was a big-time JUCO player at Central Wyoming who comes in as a junior forward. So you're looking at a fair amount of talent here on Bryant, and you're looking at a coach who previously, as an associate head coach, saw Tim Kloos at Iona be able to bring players together, one on a consistent basis in the Metro Atlantic, you know, was a team that was in the NCAA tournament frequently while Jared was there. You know, so much like David Cox, someone who has seen the head coach put things together, be successful, knows how to build culture, you know, knows how to get the most out of his players. I think David certainly did that down the stretch in his first year when URI finished with six straight wins and made the A-10 semifinals. I think last year, you know, them finishing third and having a chance to go to Brooklyn and play their way into an NCAA tournament, that was a good result for them overall if you're taking the big view. And I think that Jared could have Bryant in a spot this year going into the season where if they can compete for the top four in the NEC and make it into the tournament, that's about all you can ask considering where Bryant has been in recent seasons. It's been a while since they've played meaningful games in March like we think they will this season.
It won't happen, but Bryant on paper has the athleticism and the talent to have three or four or even five all-league guys. Sure, there's only one basketball, and it's got to be shared between seven or eight guys over the course of a game. But if you look at everyone in a vacuum, a Peter Kiss, a Melo Eggleston, a Hall Elijah, a Charles Pride, a Mike Green, up right on down the line, similar to Rhodey, and that's why we're doing the two teams back-to-back, they have a really deep bench, and there's a lot of you know, good problems for Jared Grosso. One other thing, since we haven't gotten to any practices, we haven't seen any scrimmages. We normally, at this point, on November 19th, when we're taping, we'd have two, three, maybe even four games in, depending on the schedule, because I think the season was supposed to start like the 4th or the 5th this year.
It was going to be early. I think it was the 6th.
The 6th.
You're right.
So, speaking firsthand here, this is wild. My senior year at Quinnipiac was Peter Kiss's freshman year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, he's been around the block. He was an All-MAC rookie team selection, close to being the rookie of the year in that league.
Yeah.
Pogo stick athleticism. Not a lot of people will know about him up here. And firsthand, in having a good relationship with him and watching him play, I think he's going to be able to make an immediate impact. He spent a couple of years at Rutgers, started 12 games in the Big Ten. I mean, you just don't get that level of experience in the NEC. We talk about guys from Syracuse and Maryland going to URI in the Atlantic 10. You see that occasionally, often. Power 5 down to the A-10, down to an upper mid-major level league. You rarely see that going to the small major in the NEC. So I think Jared Grosso has tapped in well to that talent. And I think Peter Kiss is going to be a really good piece for this team. I think he can guard 1 through 4 in the NEC, no doubt. And I wouldn't put it past anyone that he's going to be one of the most athletic players in the league and on his team. I mean, Hall Elijahs and him together are going to be great. So if you don't know who Peter Kiss is, there's a little bit of a preview. But he can shoot the three, he can defend, high character kid, and should be a good fit with Jared Grosso, who played at Quinnipiac, alma mater, so that I'm sure helped out in the recruiting process to get Kiss to come from the Big Ten ranks.
Yeah, that's 2016-17 season. Tom Moore's last year at Quinnipiac. He had Peter Kiss and Mikey Dixon in his backcourt. They ended up at Rutgers and St. John's, respectively. So obviously it wasn't a talent problem there. It was maybe necessarily that they were a little younger, and the roster might have needed a little more help up front and didn't necessarily mesh the way you would have hoped. But you're looking at Bryant going into the year, really not much to talk about in terms of a schedule. You look around the rest of the league, Fairleigh Dickinson is a preseason favorite. They got 6 votes from the coaches, led by Jahlil Jenkins, who has been a really good player in the NEC for a long time. We'll get a chance to see them play Providence in December. LIU Brooklyn picks 2nd. Derek Kellogg there, the former UMass coach. Ty Flowers, his former player at UMass, has followed him there. To be clear, and Jared Grosso alluded to this a little bit when I spoke with him either last week or the week before, there are good players in the NEC. And I think a lot of times when guys like Peter Kiss and Melo Eggleston, when they transfer down, they just assume that because they've been at Wake Forest, and not these two specific guys, but just generally, because they've been at Wake Forest and at Rutgers and they've played against guys who are in the NBA, that they're going to come into the NEC and walk into practice and just dominate everybody. Jahlil Jenkins and Ty Flowers and guys like Chauncey Hawkins from St. Francis Brooklyn, another senior who's on the preseason first team, they could play for a lot of people. For good teams, for good programs. We've seen it at Brown over the last 3 years with Tam and Ang Cho. He could play for a lot of people. He's going to go into the transfer portal and take a 5th year somewhere, and it's going to be at a Power 5 or Big East school. It is not going to be at a mid-major. It's not going to be, at another school that's on the level with the Ivy League. He's not going to the Patriot League to play his last year and get his master's in business econ. He's going to go somewhere where he's never going to get on a bus again, where he's going to have a private athlete's dorm. Like he's going to that level. And so I think when you look at Bryant and you think, these guys came down from the Power 5 or wherever else, like they're just going to roll through the league. That's not necessarily the case. The other thing that I love about the NEC is that we don't need to talk about resumes or about, metrics or anything else. It's getting to the tournament, winning the conference tournament, and then trying to have a chance in March Madness. Everyone is focused on that goal. You're playing these non-conference games and maybe some of the early games in conference, trying to figure out who you are and pointing towards February and March. That's where you want to play your best. And I think this team, constructed as it is, yeah, they could stumble a little bit early. There could be a lack of cohesion early. They might win some games, not necessarily playing clean, but winning based on their athleticism. And eventually you get into February and March, and maybe you'll see something a little smoother, something a little more representative of what Jared Grassell wants. But just because there are pieces there, I think people will assume O'Brien should make this huge leap and, you know, just dominate the league. That's not necessarily going to be the case.
This is the type of league that a 6 or a 7 seed makes a run. When you're watching this, the NEC championship game on ESPN, as championship week is one of the best weeks prior to March Madness, it's anyone's game when you get in. It doesn't matter 1 through 8. Now that it's chopped in half 1 through 4, there's going to be even more of a dogfight to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be surprised if the 4 beats the 1 and then the 4 goes and beats the 2 or the 3. I mean, that's just the way this league is. And that's what makes watching the NEC so much fun, is that you don't know on any given night any team can beat any team. It's not, you know, the bottom feeder, the bottom team in the Big Ten getting smoked by Michigan State, or, you know, in the ACC or other leagues like that.
And Vanderbilt going on the road to Kentucky in a given year.
You know, or Fordham going to Dayton and losing by 40.
Right.
So, no, there's a lot of parity, maybe outside of a few teams in this league, but Bryant's right there in the mix. Jared Grasso has been to the NCAA tournament. He knows what winning feels like. And like you mentioned, as much as we've been talking on this podcast about a lot of talent transferring down, the NEC gets plucked big time.
Yes.
And there's countless stories that we could name and different players that we could mention that have gone on to different schools and have led teams to Sweet 16s and have led conferences in scoring and then have parlayed that and used that into going into a great overseas career. But no, the NEC should be a lot of fun this year. It's going to be interesting to see what Bryant does. I'm optimistic, though. I'm really optimistic that Jared Grasso can make a really big leap, because they've made the postseason twice in the first 2 years, and I don't say that lightly, because not every team gets in the tournament like many leagues. You have to fight to get in the tournament, even if your record's below 500. But this is a year where I think Jared Grasso's team is going to make a jump. Expect them to be in the top four at the end of the year, like the preseason ranking. And definitely have a chance to win the NEC and be right there at the end.
To your point about the league, you know, looking back over the KenPom era, which started in 2001-02, Central Connecticut went 19-1 that first year. They're the only one loss team in the NEC since that time. Everyone else has had two or more. So it's just a very difficult league if you're going to try and go out and run the table. I would expect that to be no different this year, considering the alternate schedule format. Theoretically, you could end up playing 2 road games on back-to-back nights against a team that's picked ahead of you in the standings or near you in the standings. It's going to be hard to sweep. You could imagine teams, you know, being just above 500 and being the 2-3 seed in this league. You know, maybe 10-8, 11-7, something like that, and you still wind up a 2 seed. Just based on the schedule and what it is, it's just not going to be easy to win consistently. You touched on something there that I think we should probably wrap up with, and that's looking forward at the state of the NCAA over the next year or so. The NEC is going to feel this as much, if not more, than anyone else when the NCAA eventually, and we think they will, passes the one-time transfer exception, where players will be allowed to leave their schools one time over the course of their careers and play at their next school without sitting out a full year, without establishing 2 semesters in residence. That's a separate discussion from name, image, and likeness, which we also think that the NCAA will adopt eventually, whether it's later this year into next year, whether or not they do it on their own or there's some sort of government intervention in that, state by state or maybe federally, we don't know. But just looking at the one-time transfer rule, Maury, and the way that schools are recruiting at the lower levels, if you're outside the Power Five and in the Big East, the fact that you're able to sometimes get these players, whether it's the 2 guards with the Trailblazers right now, Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, who played at Weber State and Lehigh, if you had a one-time transfer exception, Damian Lillard's probably not staying at Weber State that long. C.J. McCollum's probably not staying at Lehigh. Dame Lillard probably ends up at Washington or at USC. You know, CJ McCollum probably ends up at Villanova, you know, for a year or two before he goes into the NBA. So if you're a school like Bryant and you're in the NEC, you're a school like Fairleigh Dickinson or LIU in the NEC, this is going to be as much about roster management as it is about identifying talent early, trying to get guys in like Michael Green and Charles Pride and Erickson Bance, the freshman guard from Shea, who set Rhode Island's scoring record last year. I think it's going to lead to more sort of under-the-radar types, player development types who might have their best basketball ahead of them in their junior and senior years, and guys who maybe you're not necessarily going to be able to steal who are going to come out and be really good right away. I wonder your thoughts on how rosters in that league are going to look going forward.
It makes coaching a lot harder. When you look at the pie of what coaches are responsible for, you're not only recruiting down the line for the next year, two, three, and four, you're recruiting your own team every year. Whether a guy has a good year or a bad year, he wants to transfer and leave because he didn't get the time or he needs to go down a level. A good year, you're afraid he's going to leave and he's going to get poached by a Power Five or a bigger conference. So, I mean, that's really the theme of what I think is what's going to happen this year. And we saw, I don't know off the top of my head, the amount of transfers this year.
Over a thousand.
It wouldn't shock me, Bill, if it was 2,000 next year, maybe 2,500. Transfers based on this rule, and yeah, I think it makes coaching a lot harder. But I think when you look at rosters, and I think you look at a guy like Jared Grosso, he identifies talent in a guy like Michael Green, who wasn't highly sought after coming out of high school, and you give a kid like that an opportunity who's loyal, he'll stay with you for a few years. And I think that's a big thing with low-level schools, is you have to find guys that weren't as highly regarded or don't have the D1 offers like a lot of other players. And that it makes it increasingly hard and difficult in the time that we're living in, because you can't go out to CAAU tournaments and you can't go to different high school practices. You're relying on tape,
right,
which adds a whole nother level of challenge to that mix. But recruiting year-round is the big theme. Your guys down the line, it's a constant, probably daily issue on the top of coaches' minds. Just as much as you're trying to win in that season, you're also trying to look and predict what may or may not happen based on what goes on in your games and your seasons. And it's a challenge, but unfortunately, that's the way we're going, and coaches will have to adjust on the fly.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, maybe philosophically how coaches look at it. You know, are they going to take on more projects? You know, maybe guys who they wouldn't have recruited before, who they might think are below them. You know, like a Division II player, essentially, who they might have looked and said, "This guy's a D2 player 5 years ago," and now they might look at him and say, we'll redshirt him the first year, and then by his second year, if he's gained 20, 30 pounds, he might be, you know, a player up front. Or, you know, if he's a guard and you might want him to lose 10, 15 pounds, or maybe he doesn't have the best left hand, or he doesn't have the best quickness, or he doesn't shoot it as well. You're going to take players with more warts and try and smooth those out a little bit. You know, and I think that's college basketball recruiting in general to a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite discussion pieces of this, and URI fans would always bring this up, they would say, you know, what if Cyril Langevin had better hands? You know, what if he could grab rebounds more frequently, catch entry passes more frequently, finish around the rim easier? And my response was, guys, if he could do that, he would have been a top 10 recruit, and he would have been at Kentucky.
You never would have known the guy.
Appreciate who he is and who he was here and how much he improved over the course of his career here. You know, appreciate the fact that he's one of the best big men in the last 20, 30 years to play at Rhode Island. You know, even with all the nitpicks that you could make in his game, realize that he was a physical force inside, an elite rebounder, you know, someone who was good in terms of in the locker room, you know, good team chemistry, sat behind players in front of him, you know, lost his starting spot to Andre Berry as a sophomore and was willing to come off the bench and still be an elite role player in the league, you know, somebody who was probably one of the best front court players coming off a bench match in the A-10 that season. And that's how you make an NCAA tournament at the mid-major level. At the low-major level, that's how you win a conference tournament. You know, when you have guys who you're able to develop over 2 or 3 years, who you take some physical deficiencies and you sort of lessen them over time, you know, I think that's what it's all about at that level. You're not just picking future pros like you would be at the Kentuckys and the Dukes and the Kansases, taking those guys and maybe exposing them more to higher level competition, or, you know, already improving on the incredible strengths that they have. You know, it's, I think that's that player development piece, I think, is going to become more important than it ever has been at the lower levels, whether it's in the NEC. You know, certainly the A-10 is a step or two above that. But if you're not in the Power 5, you're not in the Big East, you're not one of the conferences that charters everywhere and has a practice facility and spends and is on national TV and whatever else, that player development piece, I think, is going to be more important going forward in the next 5 or 10 years than it ever has been in the NCAA.
I agree on all fronts, no doubt.
You know, all right, so we've looked at URI, we've looked at Bryant. We've done all this just hoping that we have a season.
Hopefully this doesn't go to waste.
You know, because
maybe this could be the only podcast we put out all year.
It could be, you know, because in a week we could have COVID positives across the board, and we could have programs shut down. You know, but like anything else throughout these last 8 months, we're just trying to go day by day. You know, trying to anticipate where we're going to be tonight, tomorrow, you know, the next few days. We're really hoping it happens. We really want it to happen. It's a great diversion for us from quote unquote real life.
Oh yeah.
You know, for me with a first responder in my family, my brother Tom, who's a firefighter in Pawtucket, and, you know, with my cousin Katie, who's a nurse, and my friend Allie, who's a nurse in Boston, and, you know, really in the thick of things right now with COVID. You know, those are the types of things that have sort of helped me keep the job in perspective over the last few months. You know, the fact that the Zoom link doesn't work, or somebody doesn't mute their line, or, you know, I've lost an interview somewhere along the way on my recorder and deleted it and whatever else. Those all seem trivial problems now compared to, you know, what existed before March, before the NCAA tournament was canceled. And we hope to add to that over the next few months on the pod with Maury and with Nick and myself. We hope to give you a diversion, you know, just to talk about meaningless things like college basketball and, you know, why isn't player X getting more minutes and why can't player Y make three-pointers and whatever else. You know, so just to put that in perspective, we understand that we get to have fun here, and we hope, you know, and I know Maury hopes that we hope you all have fun with us.
For sure, no doubt. And there's so many different podcasts out there, and podcasts are booming, but we hope once a week you can join us for whatever it is, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, or an hour, to talk about the teams that you care so much about, whether you're an alum, whether, you know, your parents went there, you grew up in the state. Who knows? We have people, you know, listening from Florida and California who lived here and had to move out for life and for their spouses' jobs, for their own jobs. So whether it's URI, PC, Brown, Bryant, you know, we'll be talking about it all year long and hope we can be a part of your weekly schedule.
All right, Maury, thank you very much. Thanks for coming along, and looking forward to the next one. Take it easy, everybody.